From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The Alaska Department of Corrections announced this week that it plans to move inmates out of state to address overcapacity at its facilities. KTOO's Adeline Baxter has more on some of the impacts of overcrowding at Juneau's correctional facility.
Last month, the hobby shop inside Juneau's Lemon Creek Correctional Center shut down until further notice. That's where inmates do arts and crafts. But instead of activities like carving, some inmates will be sleeping there. Staff moved 18 temporary beds into the space.
And that's not something we take lightly or we really like to do, but we had to have a place for them.
That's Department of Corrections Commissioner Nancy Dahlstrom. An increase in prison population meant the facility ran out of space. At normal capacity, it houses 226 male and female inmates. Right now, 232 people reside at Lemon Creek. Dahlstrom says she didn't want to close the hobby shop because of the creative outlet it provides for inmates.
You know, it just came down to a real tough choice, but we had to do it, and I'm hoping that we will soon be able to open that back up.
She says the state correctional system is feeling the impact of HB 49, a crime reform bill meant to enforce stricter sentencing laws. Governor Mike Dunleavy signed it into law in July. Since then, DOC says Alaska's inmate population has grown by 5%.
The consequence of that is that, you know, yes, people are safer, and we have more people that are incarcerated because of their life choices that they made.
Because of that, DOC announced this week that it plans to solicit bids from prisons outside of Alaska to house sentenced inmates. Dahlstrom says the plan is to have a contract with one facility last for at least 3 years. Whatever facility is chosen must also provide rehabilitation programming and medical care on par with what's offered in-state. They also have to ensure that inmates are able to stay in touch with their families. Those details are important to people like Don Habiger. He's the community coordinator for the Juneau Reentry Coalition, a group that works on justice issues in an effort to reduce recidivism. Habiger says they're taking the wait-and-see approach to DOC's plan.
If the Department of Correction includes in that treatment processes in out-of-state locations, and they return inmates back to the state prior to release, I think the coalition would be okay with that. If they do not do those kinds of things, we would be concerned.
DOC hopes to start transferring inmates throughout the state early next year if a successful bidder is found. As Lemon Creek Correctional Center adjusts to these changes, the carving class for male inmates is canceled for now. The class was run by Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, a nonprofit that promotes Southeast Alaska Native cultures. The institute said in a statement it was dismayed that the program was suspended. It said the program has shown proven benefits by giving inmates skills they can use to make money and by restoring pride in Alaska Native heritage. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
News confirming that the U.S. Department of Agriculture plans to fully exempt the Tongass National Forest from the roadless rule came as a disappointment to members of Alaska's tourism industry. But business owners say they plan to continue pushing back against further development in the Tongass. Once again, KTOO's Adeline Baxter spoke to tour operators who feel the industry's economic impact isn't being valued.
Rumors began circling in August that President Donald Trump had directed the U.S. Forest Service to draft a full exemption of the roadless rule for Alaska. That's despite the fact that a majority of the public input received during last year's comment period opposed allowing road development in remote parts of the Tongass. Many of those comments came from members of the growing Southeast visitor industry. According to Raincoast Data, an economic analysis firm, it's now the largest private sector industry in the region. Tourism jobs outnumber timber industry jobs by more than 20 to 1. And tour operators say allowing more logging and land development in the Tongass directly threatens their businesses.
People aren't coming to Alaska to see clear-cut forests and mines and pipelines and oil rigs. They're coming to see the magnificent public lands and waters and glaciers and wildlife that we have here.
That's Lee Hart. She's founder of the Alaska Outdoor Alliance, a coalition of outdoor recreation stakeholders. She attended last week's Alaska Travel Industry Association convention in Juneau, where tourism operators from Southeast and other regions of the state urged the organization's board to push back against an exemption from the roadless rule.
Our landscapes are just the thing people around the world dream of coming to. So why can't we get more investment and positive attention to that type of development and not try to exclude it.
Many, including Hart, said during the board meeting that they felt like their involvement in the public process had been thrown out. The board declined to take any specific action at the time. In an email, ATIA spokesperson Julie Jensen said the organization would not comment, but its executive committee will be meeting later this week to discuss the issue. Dan Kirkwood runs Pack Creek Bear Tours, a wildlife viewing company in Juneau. He also works on Forest Service issues with other tour operators through a Juneau Economic Development Council working group. He says prioritizing resource development over tourism will lead to more competition among tour operators.
This shrinks the pie for everybody. And, you know, I think the way in which this decision was made has caused a lot of angst.
Kirkwood says he hopes business owners will continue speaking up in favor of the roadless rule and on behalf of their industry.
We need to stand up for having incredible scenery, wild places, outstanding wildlife. And we need to stand up and demand that the Forest Service takes us seriously as an economic opportunity.
The public comment period for the draft proposal ends December 17th. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
As many Alaskans geared up to celebrate the 152nd anniversary of the transfer of Alaska from Russia to the United States today, others were working on reframing the holiday to include the idea of decolonization. The Sitka campus of the University of Alaska held Indigenous Peoples Day events intended to move the conversation forward. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
This was the scene 2 years ago on the 150th anniversary of the Alaska transfer. A large group of Sitka residents gathered at the base of Castle Hill to sing the Eagle Sorrowing Song, while on top of the hill, another group of Sitkans dressed in 19th century period costume fire salutes while the flag of Tsarist Russia is lowered and the U.S. flag is raised.
The thing is in our town here, there's a long history. This land was never unceded or surrendered.
Lakota Hardin works in health promotions for the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium.
And the history, you know, of Alaska Day coming up, that there's this sale. Well, it's an illegal sale. You can't sell something that isn't really yours. So people, there's controversy around that, but that is the history.
SEARCH is one of a large group of partners, including Sitkans Against Family Violence, Sitka Counseling, the Sitka Health Summit, and the University of Alaska, who are trying to engage and work around decolonization and more fully recognize that Alaska's history, while worth celebrating, is more complicated than it's traditionally rendered, especially during the Alaska Day Festival. This effort is not unique to Sitka. Indigenous Peoples Day has replaced Columbus Day in many jurisdictions. Hardin was there at the beginning.
I was living in Berkeley, living in the Bay Area, when the very first Indigenous Peoples Day was proclaimed by the city of Berkeley back in 1992. And it was because of the reenactments of the Columbus and his ships and the big Italian population there in the city would have these big parades, and they were planning to reenact and replicate the three ships. And of course, we weren't having it. And that was kind of how it began.
Taking a cue from Indigenous Peoples Day, there are many who are beginning to describe Alaska Day as Reconciliation Day. But Michael Mosbach with the University of Alaska says there's much more to this partnership than a single day in October.
The lens that we're trying to view this through is this idea of the past being something that is not necessarily your fault if you are a part of the settler colonial culture, but it is something you're responsible for. And so in moving forward with this work, we hope to unpack what it means to engage in decolonial work and make sure that that's something we carry forward with us into every day.
Indigenous Peoples Day was honored in Sitka on October 14th with a series of discussions, dances, meals, and free admission to the Sheldon Jackson Museum with the objective of moving toward a deeper understanding of what's truly worth celebrating.
And so one of the goals is to come together as a community and understand some of the language around these issues, understand what it means to engage in decolonial work, understand issues like historical trauma, and kind of unpack some of these relationships, and then use that knowledge to, as a community, come together and move forward into more consistent programming around these topics.
Mosbach says there are plans to create a decolonial task force so Sitkans can continue to discuss these issues, long after the Russian flag has come down over Castle Hill on October 18th. Reporting in Sitka with help from Aaron Fulton, I'm Robert Woolsey.
President Donald Trump announced Wednesday that he intends to pick Joshua Kindred, a former oil and gas industry attorney, as a new U.S. District Court judge for Alaska. Kindred works as a lawyer in Anchorage for the Interior Department. Before that, he was an attorney for the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, an industry group that sometimes participates in lawsuits to defend oil development in federal court. Kindred has also worked as a state prosecutor. He's married to Tali Birch Kindred, who unsuccessfully applied to fill an open state Senate seat in August, following the death of her father, Chris Birch, who had held the seat previously. Kindred's nomination must be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. A previous Trump nominee for an Alaska judgeship, John Katchen, withdrew his name last year before he was confirmed. And finally, a Washington state county has filed a lawsuit against e-cigarette maker Juul after a dozen confirmed cases of vaping-related lung illness in the state. KOMO-TV reports that King County's claim accuses Juul and its affiliates of fraud, racketeering, and conspiracy while targeting children as new users of the products. Juul says it never designed its marketing to appeal to youth, denying all allegations. County officials say one in every four students acknowledged vaping in the last 30 days, and 9 out of 10 tobacco and nicotine violations in the Seattle School District were for vaping. Officials say the county is one of dozens filing lawsuits against the company. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says there are about 1,300 confirmed cases and 26 deaths related to the illness nationwide. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Friday, October 18th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Happy Alaska Day.